That website is where you can find the audio portion of this program. It's more than often than not meaningless because you don't know what's being written on the board. Well, you guys do because you were here. What I actually did one semester, which is too bad you weren't recording then, is I had some people in the class who couldn't see. And then what I did was I described everything I put on the board as I put it on the board. Imagine taking this class and not only not knowing what I'm talking about, but not being able to see either. And one of those students actually wrote the tidiest programs I've ever had handed in for homework. She really was meticulous in her spacing, tabbing, etc. Very easy to follow her code. I still see her here on campus sometimes. What was that? Someone asked a question?
Get on that website and get the audio.
The audio. See this little microphone here?
Okay.
These lectures are all being recorded.
Okay.
And you can get the recordings. Frank here has kindly put them up on a website. And you did assignment 3. Oh, hey, are you guys having fun with assignment 3? Isn't that nice? Assignment 4 is a little bit of a rest. It's easy compared to 2. Let's see, Noel, are you here yet? You're here. This is not a long minus. The paper flipped when I was moving the pen. Andrew and Enrique. Armin, are you here? There we go. Rania? Arpi, Amirian, another one for Armin. Oh, Armin's done too. I'm going to make everyone else look sad. Okay, before I say anything else, I'm going to be out of town that day. There will be class the following Monday. That's okay. I will leave you with lots of things to do, like assignment 5. Hey, Noel, before you go any further, take this. Passed my protoplasmic compiler test. Okay, questions on assignments 1, 2, 3. You guys must have questions on assignment 3. It's like we went 1, easy, 2, easy, 3. Okay, what assignment 3 is about is a whole lot of topics all at once. The first topic is about inheritance, and just briefly how that works, right? The idea behind inheritance is you create a superclass, you create a class of some kind, you put some variables into it, you put some methods into it. Any variables and methods in that class which are public, protected, or package access can be inherited by any new class that extends that original class. So I put up a person class, I gave the person a name, a method to set the name and get the name, and then I created a student class that extends person. that student class automatically has the name variable, the set name method, and the get name method. That's what I'm talking about in inheritance. You don't have to redeclare those in any way. You just use them as if they're part of the new class. Any new variables in my student case, I gave the student an ID number, which was unique to the student. Then the student had a set ID and a get ID method. If I made a new class grad student that extended student, they would now have the name, set name, get name, the ID number, the set ID number, the get ID number, and any new methods that went along with the grad student class. That's inheritance in a nutshell. Second topic, constructor methods. Constructor methods are just functions, but they're special functions. What's special about them? They don't have a return type, first of all. Why don't they have a return type? This is something you may not have thought about. Why wouldn't they have a return type, though? They don't even have a void. Right. The reason is, you don't call them. They get called for you. So you can't have a line of code that says, call my constructor method. Some of you guys tried that. It didn't work very well, did it? It was, like, disappointing. Okay? You don't call them directly. You call them indirectly. Okay? So there's no return type. Now, when that function that has the same name as the class and doesn't have a return type, when the compiler sees that in its own mysterious way of seeing, it generates code that says, call this function automatically when a new object of this type is declared, is instantiated, sorry, not declared, instantiated, meaning with the new operator. So that new operator says, not only make the new object, meaning what does it mean make an object? It means load the code, load the variables, put them in memory so you can use them. Prior to that, that class isn't in memory. In the process of doing that, the compiler also says, after you've loaded it, run the constructor method. The constructor method with no arguments is called the default constructor. If it has arguments, then it will have one or two or three or four arguments. They'll always be of different types. You can have as many constructors as you like, as long as the arguments or parameters are either a different number of them or they're a different data type, so the compiler can tell one from the other. All right. Before you go anywhere, you would like to collect this so I don't have to carry it anymore. I've carried this one for really a long time. Oh. Now I'll have nothing to carry. Oh, if you guys hand in some more stuff today, I'll have things to carry. I didn't? That's pretty cheesy, huh? Because I'm holding out on you? Let's see if I'm holding out on you. Hold on, Jim. Oh, I gave you back a third one. I gave you back a third one last week. Oh, you gave me a new third one? Oh, well, I have it somewhere. Everything is somewhere, right? Hello. Did you give it to me in the class or email it to me?
No, I gave it to you in the lab.
Up in the lab? Ah, over in the lab. Well, it may very well have gone back to the AV with the projector this morning. We'll see. I'll find them. But some other people, a whole bunch of you actually gave me things in the lab the other day, right? And I put them on top of the projector, and I said, don't let me forget these at the end of the class. And I wheeled them out somewhere. So, don't worry, I'll find them. No, no, I borrowed a projector on Thursday to take home and use, and then I brought it back today. So when we were in the lab down there, I didn't want to forget it, because that's the kind of thing I do. In this case, I remembered the projector, and I forgot everyone's assignment. Never fear, these things do not stay lost long. Hi. How's it going? Nice rig. I'm going to get one of those someday. Yeah, I don't have wheels on mine. Okay, for those of you who just arrived, important notes up here, top note, that's where you get the audio for the class. That's what's happening on Thursday, which is nothing. Okay, so the constructor method. The superclass constructor method is called automatically when you create a variable of the subclass, not when you instantiate it. That's the official word for it. So when I say new student, the person constructor is called and then the student constructor is called. Automatically. Now what happens if I in the person constructor say new student? Something happens. Right, and then what happens when it sees new students? It calls the person again, which then calls the student again, which then calls the person again, and I've said it enough times to give you an idea of what happens. Your computer runs out of memory and quits being a computer and starts being a heater. Yes?
Does it call only the constructors without arguments?
Automatically, it calls the constructors without arguments. Now, that calls the no argument constructor of person. That calls the argument of person with the name, the constructor with the name argument. This calls the constructor of person, the default, automatically, and then this is called. You notice that these parentheses, that just means call a function, right? It's just like if you had any other function. That's what's been going on. If I had this call, then it would call the student constructor with the name argument, and most likely what I will have done is called either the default person and set the name, or else I will have used that. Yes, sir. Okay. I could have easily have said, that and then pass in there. It's identical. What I need is an argument as an object. So I can either create an object like this. It's unnamed here, but within the person it will get assigned to the name variable. And the same here. Or if I do it this way and pass in here or pass in here, then I could use in out here as well as within the person or student. This name object can't be used in this part of the program except through the person variable because I don't have access to it. I didn't give it a variable name. I just created an object and sent it along. So if I want to get to this name, I have to do it through whatever the person, like this would be. Yes, the person has to have a constructor with that argument. That is, I am expecting to see in my code I'm expecting to see that method and that method. If I don't have those in my code, then these lines will result in an error. Some of you have discovered that if you create this one and you don't create that one, that you also get an error, because the compiler is looking for the default constructor method. It will write it for you in this form, meaning it doesn't do anything. It will write it for you if you don't have any constructors, but if you have constructors with arguments, and you try to create students that are calling a default constructor, you'll get an error and say, no, you have to put that one in too. So just put that one in for the heck of it, whether you use it or not.
C2 and C4.
Right, I haven't told it anything about the name, so you get a generic name. Right. If the names are going to end up being default, you want to do something. Usually what happens is you know their name, and then you use the name constructor that has the string arguments for the parts of their name. I'm just going over the rules because it has been 3 days since we did all this before. So we're doing a refresher. Yes, sir? No, if you say new student inside the student, inside one of the constructors of the student class, you'll get yourself into a loop. If you say new student inside a person constructor, you'll get yourself into a loop, because the student invokes the person constructor, which would then make another new student, which would then make another new person, and on and on and on. So, and that's happened to several people so far. You have to be very careful about what you extend. You know, your hierarchy, you don't just say, oh, well, I'm just going to extend some things because I need these variables, because you can get yourself into this infinite loop trouble. That's another common one, where someone just says, oh, well, I just have to have a way to get at these variables, so I'll just make this part of the hierarchy, even though the class is in no way related. Then what happens is you make, you know, like if I had assignment 3 extend person, and I create a new person in it, well, when I create the assignment 3, it makes the person machine. You don't want to do that. Okay. This is the first mechanism of implicit function calling. We will see several of these through the semester, where some code is being called, and you just have to be aware that that's the way the program behaves. When I say new student, you can say, oh yeah, there's parentheses, so that must be a method call. But you can't see the new person method call. That's not in this line of code. And yet that's what happens. When we go to make windows in this class, which we're going to start doing this week, what's at the top of the Java hierarchy?
Object.
There's actually a class called object. Okay? Underneath that, there's a class called component. And underneath that, there's a class called container. And underneath that, there's a class called window. And underneath that, there's a class called frame. And later on in the week, we're going to be making a new frame. Well, you can see what happens when you make a new frame. The object class is called. The component class is called. The container class is called. The window class is called. And finally, the frame class is called. That is, their constructors are called. So there's a lot. I have a simple line of code that says frame f equals new frame. I've kicked off a whole lot of activity that I don't know about. When I make the person, I actually call the object constructor, remember? You don't have to put it into your code, you don't have to say person extends object, because in Java everything extends object, except byte, char, float, double, int. Why not? Why don't those short, long, Boolean? They're the primitive data types. They're just storage classes. Everything else is a derived data type from those primitive data types. Everything else is an object. Okay, so these hierarchies get really deep, and then we put our own window type down here. We may put our own panel type down here, and put a bunch of stuff down here. We're calling all that code without knowing it. Not only are we calling all that code without knowing it, well, you know it now because I told you, but you'll forget it, but you're also gaining access to literally hundreds of methods and variables which you don't know about, which you have to look up somehow in order to use them, right? It's one thing to make a window, it's something else to put it to use, and of course the object class has methods, the component class has methods, the container class, the window class, the frame class, they all have methods. The advantage of that is you just say frame f equals new frame, set visible true, you see a window. Well, you give it a size and a place to be. The downside of that is all of those hundreds of methods and variables are things you have to learn as you go along. Now, if you have a visual Java designer, you can design a window and put buttons and all that junk into it, and it will do it all for you, but you will remain clueless. So in this class, what we're going to do is become clueful by doing it step-by-step typing rather than programming in pictures. By the end of the course, I'll go through Java Beans and the promise in the future of programming in pictures using component architecture. But in the meantime, we're going to do it the hard way. Questions on assignment 3. Is this making sense for those of you who were senseless last week? See, there's a little barrier here because I'm using a lot of words which are nonsense words, like constructor, that's, you know, it's something that builds something, right? That's what a constructor is. So the constructor method, you're supposed to initialize variables. That's what they're for. So if you have variables in your program, either primitive variables or in our case you have a name, then I would put new name in here to make sure the name has an object to go with it. Yeah?
So if you're overloading and now I want to call it the constructor with the parameters in it, and I have my original vision in the default constructor, so if the default constructor gets called automatically, we must receive the overloading of it.
You mean like here, if I say name equals new name?
Yeah.
Well, I don't have to here because I got the name from somewhere else.
Oh, no. If you have some kind of integer, and you find the original.
Where do I initialize it where?
No, from the student class.
Oh, well, see, this. Let's go over here and we'll do a student class so that we have one. Because the student does have an integer, right? creates the name for the student, or this creates the name for the student. There's a way to call either one. Okay? They have nothing to do with the student's ID number. It does. This constructor gets called automatically, and there's a way to override it. How do I override that? How do I prevent the default constructor from being called? Like that. So in this case, I create a student with a name argument, like I had up in the code. This calls this. That's right. That's what the super and the this are all about. Where the code actually goes is it goes to this line of each constructor method. And then the compiler checks to see is the next line a call to a constructor. And if it is, the path is changed.
You're not really overriding, you're just overloading.
I'm overloading, this is not overriding.
Right, you can't really override, you can't override.
Right.
How
Yeah, you can't mask. Overriding is where you mask a method with another method. When we get the polymorphic behavior, we will see that we do override methods. But in this case, we aren't. You can't override them because you can't call them. Right? You can only call them implicitly with the, you know, indirectly when you do the instantiation of the object, and then you can explicitly change the path by putting in either this or super as the first line. So far, so good. You guys are really, really quiet. If you like to spend the whole weekend at the beach and now you're... You just know all this stuff and you're wondering why I'm repeating it? Remember what I said, this is the most important single idea for the whole semester. If you don't get this, you don't get how Java flows control-wise from statement to statement, then the rest of the semester will become nonsense to you because you won't know why the program went from, you know, point A to point B to point C. Remember what happened? We started with a student, and then we are going procedurally, step by step, and then suddenly we branched off laterally and went to the person class, and then we went to the name class, and we came back to the person class, and we came back to the student class, and finally we got back to our assignment 3. So this language not only works procedurally, step by step through a program, but it also proceeds laterally at times. Goes to a totally different part of the program and comes back. The code you have been using all of these years that you have been writing programs of any description have been doing that already, but either you remain unaware of it, right? Or it's something where you've called it and said, please branch off. In this case, there's a lot of this branching off that happens automatically as part of the language.
So start off with the main code, and then you branch off.
Right. And where do you start? Where does the program begin execution?
From the
main code. No. Name. is always the first statement in the main method of the startup class, whatever your startup class is. You guys who use JBuilder 5 on Thursday night, those of you who have downloaded JBuilder 6 have discovered you have to explicitly say this is the startup class. And JBuilder 3, whatever class you have highlighted, if it has main, it starts there. If it doesn't have main, it goes and finds a main in the project and starts there. It's done automatically for you. I like that better. I get a lot of emails from people that say, I tried to run my program and it came up and it said incomplete configuration. That means you didn't push that button with the three dots on it and tell it what was the startup class. We'll go over that again if we need to. Okay. Now let me talk just briefly about communication between objects. And for that, I'm going to have to draw a diagram of an object. What's an object look like? That's right. That's one. There's another one. Okay? Those circles really just are a diagram for scope. Right, that's the code that goes with that circle. Sometimes I call this the wonton soup model of programming. You've heard like spaghetti code and so on. And that's because these circles, or balls, if you will, the scope of this, any variables that you declare in here, the scope of that variable is what? It's like the soup. It's anywhere in the bowl, it's liable to be. Okay? If I have a method, that's like a wonton, right? It's a little piece of code. It's self-contained. It's got its own variables, its own activity, and it's surrounded by the soup, but any variables I have in here are local and not shared. Right? Does this match what you've heard before? The method can use the variable I, but any other methods in this class cannot use the variable J. J is local only to this method. I is anywhere touched by the soup. Okay. Now notice that class B has int I, class A has int I. Are they any relation to each other? No, they just happen to have the same name. You can use these names over and over again because they're totally independent. This is B dot I, that's A dot I. Method's the same name, this is B method, that's A method. Yes, sir? Yes, it is a package variable, but it's still an AI, not a BI. So even if A and B are in the same package, the compiler knows these apart because this one's in B and that one's in A. See the scope of this? It's the bowl. It's like, you know, to get this I and that I in the same place, you'd have to put it all dumped into a bigger bowl. It would be like A dot I, and that one would be B dot I. Yes. No. There's no such thing. Every variable in Java is in a class. Period. There's nothing outside of a class. Every executable statement in Java is inside a method, with one slight exception. You can instantiate an object outside of a method. That is, I could have that piece of code not in a method, public B, capital B, little b, equals new B, open close parentheses. What I've done is I've declared a variable and instantiated it in one step. That is the one exception to having an executable statement outside a method. So it's very common for you guys to get errors where what you've done is you've put a closing brace and closed off a method, and then you type another executable statement. That'll generate an error that says something like interface or class expected. Yes?
The public B is equal to B. Wrote,
yes.
Does it have to be a single statement like that?
If you have it outside the scope of a method,
yes,
it has to be in a single statement. Otherwise, all you can do is the declaration, and then you have to say B equals new B inside a method. You can't do this outside a method. Oh, you can do it public, private, protected. Access specifier isn't important. Just as a reminder, public or whatever is an access specifier. Void or some other data type is the return type for the method. The word method here is taking the place of the method name. Int arg, these are arguments. Or parameters. That's what they're called. Okay, so when I'm yakking up here, that's what I'm yakking about. Yes? Yeah, that's what we're about to discuss. Is, obviously, if this language is such that all of the code has to be, and all of the variables have to be in classes, and all of the executable code has to be in methods, obviously, in order to make the language useful, I have to have a way of communicating between one object and another if I want to set variables, if I want to access variables, if I want to execute some routines, and so on, so, you know, call some functions. So, what methods of communication are available between objects that we know of so far? Yeah, I can make an instance of one inside the other. So by saying B equals new B inside class A, I have a way to get at variables and methods inside class B from class A. Right? Does that follow your understanding so far? So if I don't do this, what would be a possible alternative for communicating? Yeah, I could have a hierarchy so that I have access between one and the other in a hierarchy. What's another way? You guys actually have used another way. We discussed it last week, and I want to make sure that you're reminded of this tool. Yeah, like the system class. If you have a static variable or a static method in a class, you can use that method or variable in that class without making an instance of that class. You simply say class name dot variable name, class name dot method name. Okay. Now that I've got a B, what way do I have to talk to B? See, I created a B inside A. I better do it right so you guys don't get mad at me. I will put the little B equals new big B inside the method. Now that I have the little B inside class A, inside a method, what way do I have to talk to class B? Yeah, the dot operator. When I use the dot operator, I can say B dot I equals 3, provided what? What's that dependent on? If you see that line of code, and you're the compiler, what are you going to check? You're going to check to see that I is accessible from A, meaning is are A and B in the same package? If they're in the same package, that means that I is accessible, hence the access specifier. Or if I was public, then it's accessible. If it's protected, there's slightly different rules, but they're very similar to package rules. We'll look at those later on. And otherwise, you'll get an error that says, I can't get to I from here. Okay, if you can't get to I from there, what other way might you have of getting to I? Yeah, maybe there's a set method. Maybe over in class B, I better not call it I better call it arg. That's what these arguments for. Oh, incidentally, this little mistake that I made, I put a semicolon at the end of the method definition line. That's a very strong argument, pardon the pun, to putting the curly brace on the same line as the method definition. Because if you put a semicolon there, you'll get compiler errors, and they aren't always easy to evaluate. You can send it to me, and I'll go, hey, you put a semicolon there, because I've seen it so many times, I look for it first. But if it's your code, you might just go hunting around a while. Okay, so what I could do is I could say, here, B dot set I 3. Now I have access to I from outside, and then inside here, I equals arg. Okay, so I can communicate through an argument. What's another way I can communicate? See, this is all about communication. Right? These are communication tools. The access specifier is a communication tool. It's like a gate and a fence. You have a key or you don't. Return type, communication tool. You can get something back with it. The method name, that's a communication tool. It says which piece of code you want to call. The argument, that's a communication tool. You say, I want to send this value into that object to have it respond to me in some way. I can't say capital B dot I because this isn't a static variable. This is an instance variable. Yeah, well that's because if this was declared static, then I could say B dot I, but it's not static. So I can't say that. If the class had package access, I couldn't do anything if I was outside the folder that class occurred in. If I do that, I can only create Bs inside of a the folder that it's in.
But like you couldn't even pass through it to the B7, is that what
problem? Well, I wouldn't be able to create one. If I couldn't create one, I couldn't call it set method. So we're just going to make all of our classes public this semester. You see, there's a bunch of stuff that you will see in terms of inner classes and whatnot where there's funny things afoot. And we look at that a little bit at the end, and I have an inner class handout that now works where it shows what the rules are. But that's way down the road. Okay. So I could also, if I had a method in here, one more communication technique, which is to return a value. Right? I can make the data type of a method match an object or one of the primitive data types that I want the value for. And then I can say out here something like J equals B dot get I. So now I've communicated to this object. First I created it, which means I called its constructor method. You can guess why constructor methods are normally public. You can't create something if you can't call it constructed. Okay, so I communicated to it on this line. And now, using this new object, I've communicated to it this way, using the argument, sent the value in. Here I've communicated it and retrieved the value from it. Yes, sir? That's right. If it's not accessible, and this is package access, if I'm not in that same folder, if A isn't in the same folder as B, then I can't get at that I. That's data hiding. That's what that's all about. This bowl here, that's the encapsulation. Yeah. Functions can be static. You know that. Why? Because main is static. Remember main? Main is static. In assignment 3, you have an A3 class, for example. Every A3 object shares the same main. That way there's no confusion to the machine about what line of code it's executing, right? If it had a whole bunch of mains, it wouldn't know, am I supposed to be in that one, or which one am I supposed to be in? It's there's one and only one, which is controlling and holding together the program. What a lot of stuff, huh? Just rules. It's all just rules. And none of it's done us much good so far. Well, tonight we have to learn one more set of rules. And then we're on through the fog and we'll actually do something useful. Make my least favorite color a green window. Yes?
If I
that's local to it.
Yeah.
So you can't get at that from anywhere else in the code. Period. Right. Now, let's say that you have a variable that you call one method. We're going to see a lot of this in the next part of the course, that is when we start actually using multiple objects in our programs in a sophisticated way. That's with quotes around it, sophisticated. Because there's nothing in Java that's really very sophisticated. In any case, there is a way of what's called expanding the scope of a variable. So that let's say I pass this argument in here. When I do this assignment to I, you can see how the value of this argument is now available to the whole program. Right? If I pass the number 3 into set I becomes 3. Then if I go to get I and I say return I, it's 3. So that value, 3, has now propagated down to this other method. Okay? When we're dealing with objects, let's say I had object O, can I do that? Yeah, you can have an object as an argument. And then what I can have is I can have an object variable, O local, it's an Irish object. This argument, object O, is limited in scope to just this method. Right? Because it's part of that method. But the scope of O local is the entire class. So by assigning O local to O, now I've expanded the scope of O so that I can use it anywhere in the class in any method. And you're going to see that that's really handy, because later on you're going to get to using code where you want to have access to arguments from that method in some other method. And maybe the other method is something you can't even call directly. Because it turns out in this language there are several methods that you don't call. They get called for you. You're responsible for writing it, but someone else is responsible for calling it. And that's very common. So that's what we'll be doing in the second half of the course. Huh? Is this making sense at all?
Is that wrapping?
Is that wrapping? No, wrapping is like... No, when we'll talk about the wrapper classes tonight when we do the arrays and vectors. No, that is I forgot what that is. It's not wrapping. Those are things like the listener classes they call paint, remember paint, good old paint as we call it. It's similar in idea, but it's different. This is not wrapping. This is called expanding the scope. In a minute, we will look at wrapping in relation to vectors and arrays. Okay, well, you guys have been very patient through all of this. Have you noticed what we did is we repeated last Wednesday and Thursday? And hopefully, we will repeat it. But it will take less and less time each time we repeat it, and then eventually I'll be talking about it as if it's an old friend to you. Okay, let's take a break. After the break, I'm going to talk about arrays and vectors. So think deep thoughts about arrays and vectors. And yes, you can do the wave if you like. Well, how was that break? Pretty good? Refreshing?
Too short.
Too short. Yep, well, the next one will be longer. We are back in the third floor lab today for those of you who are working in the lab. I've noticed that there are some people who are now working at home. That's okay, too. Just do not fall behind. Like I do. What's an array?
A bunch of stuff with the same name.
That could be a class, too. How is an array different from a class? It's a very important difference. The difference between an array as an aggregate data type, meaning it's got many parts, and a class, which is an aggregate data type, which has many different parts, is that the different parts in an array are all the same size. They are all the same data type. storage type. So, int I is just a place in memory, it's a primitive data type. Okay? Int I array with square brackets next to it is an object. Now, because it's an object, you instantiate it. And if you go online to my website under assignment 4, you will see all of this done for you. Okay? Now, what's nice about this? Remember, this is a primitive data type int. So one element, these are array nerd speak. One element of the array is a primitive data type integer, but the array itself is an object. So this variable iArray is an object. Okay? In other languages, you make an array, you'll say int array, square brackets, whatever, and you give it a size. Or you say if it's in basic dim, array name, parentheses, some size. In this language, you do it this way. But the nice thing is that this number size is a variable, or it can be a variable. It doesn't have to be a variable. I could put a number in there, 20, and then I would have 20 elements in the array. Okay? But it's much more useful if you have this array being created dynamically to be whatever size you want it to be. So instead of saying it's going to be 10 and only 10 and forever 10, even if I only need 3, I can make it any size I want. So this number here, I could get that from the keyboard, for example. I could say, how many elements do you want in the array? I could type in a number, and then I could use that number here. Why would I do that? How would I do that? Any of you guys read assignment 4 yet? You did. Why would I do that? Okay, so here we have a mismatch. You were listening, he was reading. If we put the two of you together, you'll make a team. That's called team building. Okay, in assignment 4, I ask you to enter a number from the keyboard, create an array of your subclass type, and then use that array in some specific way. So we'll go on to do that. But in any case, what I could do is I could get this number from the keyboard. How would I do that? Yeah, size equals gn dot number input, enter how many elements of the array you want. Right out of assignment 2. So we're going to take assignment 2 and assignment 3 and put them together. That means we have to learn how to import as well. Okay, so the elements of an array in Java, here would be one element. The elements in the array are type int. The number in the square brackets is known as its index. Basically, what we have is we have an array of ints. There are size, many elements, and the index goes from 0 to size minus 1. Okay? So, I array 0 is the first element, 0 is the first index. The data type of this expression is int. See, I just take away the I array square bracket part. That leaves me the data type int. That's an integer. This is a primitive data type. I array by itself is an object. Okay. So I can do things based on this knowledge. I can say, for int I equals 0, I less than size, or more conveniently and more properly, I can say I less than I array dot length I plus plus. So that little loop does what? Well, what it does is it stores into the array the value of its index times 2. That's how you would say it if you were writing it in a book. Okay, see this variable length? See the dot operator? Every array in Java carries with it its length. That's very convenient. If I'm in the same method where I have this value size, I'm okay. I could use size here. But if I pass the array on to another function in some other class, it doesn't know about the size variable, but the array carries with it its length. So every array knows how long it is. So this is the proper way of traversing the elements of an array. If you had a multiply dimensioned array, where you say new int, size 1, size 2, whatever, each element of the array is the length of the second dimension. Okay? So you just give a square bracket 0 dot length, that gives you the length of the second dimension, and so on, and so on, and so on. The first one is just length. And then each element, see, if you have multiply dimensioned arrays, if I take off one of those, that's still an object, and it still has a dot length associated with it. You actually are getting multiple objects this way. Well, it carries with it. It knows. Oh, you make the argument be double square brackets too, and all the objects go together. Right. And the compiler will tell you, you can't do those things like you do in C, where you pass a two-dimensional array and treat it as a one-dimensional array. You can't play funny tricks on the Java compiler. You said two dimensions, it's got to be two dimensions. So there's some drawbacks. There's some drawbacks to arrays in general. Right? One of the drawbacks being that they're fixed. Once you create them, that's a fixed size. If you want to make it bigger, you have to make a new array and copy things into it, hence the string, which has within it a character array. And remember, with every string, when you do an operation on a string, it creates a new string. That's because it has to go through and create a new array and do the copy over and all that. Yes, I can, but if I instantiate it again without copying things over, I've lost all of the stuff inside it. And I marked the old one for garbage collection. What he just said, what we were just talking about, is I can just say IRA equals new and some other size. Well, when I do this, I make a new object and that old object is gone. I can't get it back. So I probably want to say new array equals that and then copy the old array to the new array. But we don't do a lot of that in here. I mean, well, what I do when you say this array equals that array is you basically move the address over, but you don't change the size. What you have is you have two variables pointing to the same place in memory. Just as if you had passed it as an argument. No, they can't be. It's going to be the same place in memory. They can't be different sizes. They're the same place. Right? If I have int they're both pointing there. Then you have to copy it over, because as soon as you do the assignment, you've said that this address is that address. You don't have, there isn't an operation, an overridden assignment operator that allows you to instantly copy all the elements of one array to another. You have to do it yourself. Just like in C++, if you did it, you would override the assignment operator for arrays. Right. We'll see that there's ways to get around all this that are much more clever than. In any case, this is an array of a primitive data type. Now what I'm going to do is I'm going to talk about arrays of objects. And with arrays of objects, you have to do two steps. And this is what you're going to do in assignment 4. Assignment 4 is actually extremely easy if you've done assignment 3. Extremely easy. And then what you can do for your own education is make it more complicated. Okay? When you use arrays of objects, see, everything else is the same here. SArray.length, that's how long it is. Before you use any elements of this array, you have to put a new instance of the object in there. Okay? SArray is data type array of students. But it doesn't have any students in it. Just like if you make an array of integers, it doesn't have any integer values in it. They're all set to zero. When I make a student array, it doesn't have any students in it. It's all set to null. Null pointer exception, null object encountered, null, that null. Okay? So this array of students is like a classroom with desks in it. This tells you how many desks are there, but there are not any people there. Now, Now there are people there. So you have to do this in two steps. The first step, create the array. Second step, initialize the objects in the array. Now, for those minimalists among you, that is the beginning and end of assignment 4. And in fact, this is also the answer to one of the questions on the midterm. See how easy it is? If you can remember it when the time comes. If you've taken careful notes. Yes?
What's the question?
7. Question 7. However, you could go on from this. See, first of all, you're going to want to import assignment 2 so that you can use get number. And then what I'm going to show you is how to modify the get number class so you could also get strings. You can get numbers, you can get strings. Now, if I can get numbers and I can get strings with a prompt, then what could I do in here? I could ask for the student's name and ID number and then create the student along with their name and ID number all in one step here. That's more useful. That will be more educational, a more educational approach to assignment 4. It's a little more work, but it's not a lot more work. Okay? You want me to go through that briefly just so you've seen it before we do our lab tonight? Yeah. Huh? Well, try different numbers. You have a thing that lets you enter any number you want. Run it and type in 400 trillion and see if it runs. It's an integer, and an integer in this language is a big number. So what? If you make it a negative integer, your computer turns inside out, and the circuit boards are all on the cover, and the cover's inside. So be very careful with this particular routine. Just like if you write to the keyboard, the keys pop off, it's the same thing. Yes, sir. No, no, you do it at runtime. You use the get number class and you say, how big do you want the array? And then you type in a number. Now, if you type in a number bigger than about 3, you're going to get bored typing in stuff here. And now I also get this question. What do I want for the output? People say, well, now I did this, but what do you want for the output? Well, what do you want for the output? If you did this and you're just learning about it, what would you do to find out if it worked or not? I can use the methods from assignment 3 in assignment 4. So I can print out the name. Here their name should be default. Because that's what I did in my default constructor in person in name. Is I had the name set the default name to default. Because I haven't asked it for anything different here. That's what it should be, and if you just print it as many times as the number size. Okay? That's it. That's all of assignment 4. Nothing to it. If you've done assignment 3. See, aren't you guys relieved? Yes? We're going to do that right now. Yes? And A2. I'll do it right now. I'll go through the steps. Yes, sir. We're going to do that right now. We're going to turn our assignment to get number class into a get anything class that reads a string or a number using our buffered reader from assignment two. That is inside the get number class, the string which is being converted into a number is being read by a buffered reader object. So we're going to use that tonight. Yes?
I think we could just apply the value to it and then go through another form and then extend it.
Exactly. You can do it all in one step, you can do it in two steps, in eight steps, you just take your pick. I want you guys, above all, in any of these assignments, the goal is learn something. Learn as much as you can from each assignment as you go along, and your later assignments will be more fruitful. If you take the minimal approach all the way through, you will finish. But you will finish behind the people who have taken a more active role. Well, you won't really be behind them unless you're in the parking lot leaving late, but you know what I mean. You will have got less for your time. So we're going to learn a whole bunch of things now very quickly, if this works. If it doesn't work, you'll learn a lot less in the same amount of time. Don't you guys just hate computers after a while? These things are wicked, wicked, wicked machines. If you don't yet, you may someday. There's no A4. There's an A2, 2A4, but we'll just ignore that. So we can just start right up. Okay, the very first thing you do is you check your default properties. If you're upstairs, you set that to A:A:. Don't forget to do that. It gets us into this little micro nightmare if you forget that. You all know who's forgotten it so far. I make a new project, and I'm going to call it A4.jpr, that's the Java project. I'll make a new startup class, and I will call it something clever like A4. And I'll have it make a parameterless constructor now, because I know what that is, right? So now that we know what it is, we'll leave that box checked because we know it's a very useful thing to have. I'll still throw away that line and that line because they're a nuisance. But now I'll keep this line because this line of code here says what? It says call that constructor method. So I can do all my work up in this constructor method if I want. Okay, now I want to create a student, because what I tell you to do in assignment 4 is to create an array of the subclass type from assignment 3. Okay? So, the first thing I have to do is import something. And, look, there's assignment 3. So I'll import assignment 3 dot. Now I have a choice of name, person, student, or star. I'll import everything from assignment 3. So now I'm ready to use my student class. Okay? I also want to import A2.getNumber, because I need that getNumber class from A2. Now I can go ahead and I can say student S array, or more commonly in Java, student array S. If you're a C programmer, you do it that way because it's a habit. So when you see me do it, I usually do it that way because it's a habit from years of practice. Okay. But if you're a Java programmer and you're new to it, you say, I want to make an array of students. Equals nothing. Let's just make an array of students. Compile successfully, no errors. That means that I imported okay, my array syntax is okay. When you're learning a new syntax, compile it as you go just to see what you know and what you don't know. Now, I can say int number equals, oh no, I need what? I need a get number. Now I can say int number equals gn dot, double click, number input, how many students? And then I can say what? S equals new student number. Yay. Still works. For int I equals 0, I is less than number, S dot length, I plus plus. Why don't I want to use number? Number may not be available somewhere else where I use it, so I want to make sure that I remember this syntax, that I have a length variable. S sub I equals new student. There I put the student object in. I just did assignment 4. It's a very easy assignment. That is the minimalist approach to assignment 4. Okay? Yes?
Some of us may have to use it when we're using car or using a program.
Well, I guess you're going to have to change the names of those objects, aren't you? Do a global change of student to car and you'll be all set. For example. They're laughing, but they haven't done assignment 3 yet, so they don't know what we're talking about. But they'll find out. All right? So that's basically what it said. When you read the assignment, that's what the assignment says to do. Now, it looks easy from your point right here when I'm doing it, but life changes quickly. Okay? Now what I'm going to do is I'm going to go over to my old assignment 2, and I'm going to get my getNumber class out of there. And then I'm going to go back to my assignment 4. I'm going to get rid of that code that I imported just for fun. And I'm going to say new class And I'll call it Get Anything. Then I'll paste the Get Number class in there. Get to the A2 package. So basically what I have is I have my old assignment 2 Get Number class. But I'm going to modify it. And here's why I'm going to modify it. Because I want to be able to get my student's name. My remote is sitting in the back row. He's not even listening. We need a bigger screen or a better projector, right? Or more tall people. Yeah, the projector in the other room, you noticed, was the full screen width. Oh, well, we got this one first, and now it's obsolete. But it costs more than a car, so they won't throw it away. Okay, so I've changed its name to Get Anything. And now what I want to do is I want to not only be able to get a number, but I'd like to be able to just get a string. Well, it turns out that I have all, see, here's a string right here, string S. That's the string I want to get. And I have all the code here that I need to do that. So I'm just going to copy it and paste it. Now, this function, also known as a method, returns an int. I'm going to change its return type to string. And it says number input, I'm going to change that word number to string. All right? So far, so good? Now, anything I find in here related to a number, I'm going to just throw it overboard. So, value, int, don't need it. Number format, don't need it. Try number blah, 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 parse exception, don't need it. Finally, return value, I'm going to return S instead. Yay. And now I have a class that will give me back a number from the keyboard or a string from the keyboard, which means that for each student, I can ask for their name from the keyboard, for example, if I want. That was pretty easy. Once you know how, you guys, when you do assignment 5, you're all going to know how to do this on your own, but right now I'm showing you how to do it with my help. Okay? Now I go back to my A4, and instead of saying, see, I'll get number turned red because I got rid of the import, and I just call it Get Anything. The Get Number still works. See, I compile it, I still have a number input method in there. I can get an integer back, no problem. But now I can use it to get a string. So, for example, I can say, what? Let's say up here, I create a variable called string first last. Then here I can say first equals gn dot. Now look, I have a string input. What's the first name? And last is what's the last name. Now I can say new student equals new name first last. And let me pass it I, which is the ID number. What the heck? Oops, sorry. New name. Let me just see what constructors I have available here. Let's see if the student... Oh no, it does not have a student name int. So what are the... I have string, first, last, int. Okay, I don't have a name like that, so I just pass first, last. Where does the name get created? Thinking back to last week. In the person class, what happens is the student gets the first and last name. That calls the person constructor that then creates a new name with those first and last name. Okay, so now let's try it. Okay, I could also have asked for their ID number. Rather than passing it I could say, what is their ID number, and use number input to get the ID number. In any case, now my program's a little more useful. Run the program, how many students? 3, first name A, last name B, first name C, last name D, first name E, last name F. My program's over. Now, what do I want to do if I want to see that I actually did something in my program? System.out.println. S sub I dot get name dot get first plus S sub I dot. Where does get name come from? Okay. In a minute. Okay. Over here, when I type the dot here next to get name, it gives me a list of the variables and methods available. There's the get first, there's the get last, there's the name constructor. Equals hashtag notify, notify all, toString, and wait. Where did those come from? I didn't write those last week. Object. These are all methods from the object class. Okay, and what you will notice if we go back in the code, when I type s sub I dot, in bold case are the methods from the student class, and then in the normal font, the object, and then get name is from the person class. There's the person constructor is available. There's the set name that's available. Okay. So the way that this works is it shows you not only the methods and variables in this class, but the ones it inherits. The green ones, no, they aren't all from objects. See, here's one that's green. I forget what the color coding is. You guys will remember it for me as we go along. There you go, it's void. See, I knew you guys would get it for me as we went along. Okay. So get name returns a name object. I type dot. That shows me the methods that are available. Well, that dot didn't end up in the right place. Dot get last. Okay. So now we can not only get our student, but we can print our student out. We could also print out plus S sub I. If you can't see it, you will soon. Dot get ID. What happens if I do a plus sign next to an integer? Remember, get ID over here. Well, even I can't see it now. Oops. That was pretty lively, huh? Don't you love it? if I have a string, this function here returns an int. What does the string plus int yield? A string. Remember, every operation you do on a string will all end up being a new string. And any numbers that are in the list get converted to string type. Okay, so now I can run my program. How many students? 3, A, B, C, D, E, F. And it prints out AB0, CD1, EF2. So each of the students has been initialized with a name and an ID number. That's a more fruitful approach to assignment 4, and then you can experiment on from there. Okay? This tonight, what we've done is assignment 4 using arrays. Tomorrow night, I will do assignment 4 using vectors, and I will also go through the wrapper classes of how to wrap an integer or a double or whatnot, a primitive data type, to make it an object. Yes?